He said, "That's good. Let's give me a couple minutes. We're going to do whatever and I'll explain to you what happened." And so he, after a couple minutes, he sort of swung. There's this big TV just to my left, monitor. He swung it around, put it right in front of me, and he asked me if I knew what a widowmaker was. And I said to him, I did. And he said, "Well, you had a widowmaker, heart attack." And I said, "Okay." Like, how do you process that? And he explained to me a little bit more about what it was. And then he was curious about how I ended up in the hospital, where I was prior to what I was doing. And I explained to him, you know, what I just explained to you guys, that I was out for a run and you know, took an ambulance to the hospital. And he said to me that I was very lucky. First of all, he said that, you know, the survival rate for a widowmaker heart attack is anywhere between 10 and 20%. Really, time is of the essence. Getting to, you know, getting to the right place and getting the right treatment is what will save someone's life. So he explained all this to me, and he basically said to me that, you know, had things been different, you know, I probably wouldn't be alive.
Welcome to Inspiring Journeys. I'm Paul Stressner, and alongside me are the incredible Adriana Ferns and the unstoppable
Terry Nelson.
Hey everyone, it's Adriana here. From a challenging path to becoming a fitness instructor, I've learned that every step counts in the journey to better self.
Hey, what's up everyone? I'm Carrie Nelson, your obstacle course crushing adaptive athlete warrior, Spartan races, major marathons. I'm breaking barriers and redefining what's possible.
And I'm on a mission to run a 5K in every state, shining a spotlight on the charities that make a difference in each community. But on Inspiring Journeys, we're not just about conquering personal goals.
Our podcast is a celebration of resilience, determination, and the transformative power of personal growth. We'll be sharing stories of individuals who have faced challenges head on and emerged stronger.
Yeah, you know, life is a series of obstacles, and I've learned to turn them into stepping stones. Let's inspire others to do the same.
That's right. And it's not just about our awesome guest stories. It's about yours, too. We want to ignite that spark within you, encouraging every listener to embark on their unique and inspiring journey.
So get ready to lace up your shoes, break down those walls, and join us each week as we explore the extraordinary paths that lead to growth, triumph, and ultimately an inspiring life.
This is Inspiring Journeys. Let's run, climb, and soar together.
Welcome to Inspiring Journeys. And as usual, we start off with our grateful list. And Carrie, do you want to start again?
Sure. Yeah. I am grateful for quick getaways. I went down to Florida to see my best friend get married, and I photographed it at the same time. So it was like maid of honor duties and photographer duties. So it was a pretty intense day, but it was nice to get away from the routine and see some people that I haven't seen in a really long time and kind of like refill my cup of all the friendship vibes and all that stuff. So I think I handled having the 2 feet of snow that we just got dumped on us a little bit better, because I had just been in Florida the week before in shorts and a tank top. So coming back and having to deal with another snap of cold wasn't as harsh had it been that we just fared the entire winter. So I'm grateful for quick getaways.
All right, and then, I have something that I'm really grateful for that I was not expecting. I think I mentioned it last week. I did this elimination diet, mm-hmm. and if it was suggested to me by Kate DaCosta, and that was like episode 3, so definitely check that out. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to try that, and I think I also mentioned on that episode that most of my life, I've had like these nasty headaches every time that it's going to rain or when it's raining or snowing or anything. And it was getting debilitating. It's been getting worse and worse as I got older. And so I did this elimination diet for the past month. And I started back on coffee again last week. And it rained on Wednesday, I think, here. And I was at work, and I was just a little bit tired from I was in the office all week. And then when I left work, it was raining and sleeting out, and I had no headache.
That's
It
awesome.
was incredible. I've never had that happen before. The only time I've had that happen is when I went to Colorado for some reason. I don't know if it was the air pressure or what, but I was in shock. And then it rained again all day yesterday and no headache.
Yes,
So
that's awesome.
Kate DaCosta is a miracle worker. So
Sometimes that's the way to do it, right? To just kind of take it all out and then see whatever it is that's causing that issue. That's great.
And I have a strong feeling. Well, I brought most of the stuff back, and I know that it's going to be the wheat. So I think that's causing inflammation. So, and then Kate also recommended this book, Wheat Belly, to me. So I've been reading that. And the author of the book had the same problem that I have. Like, he was exercising. Like, I exercise every day, and I eat a lot of like whole foods. I eat healthy and everything, and I have a hard time losing my stomach. And he had the same problem, and he eliminated the wheat because all kinds of crap in that that's man-made, and your body can't handle it. And that's the trick. And so I think this has been doing the inflammation. And well, I also should credit Adriana because she's my trainer, and she probably told me about this elimination diet years ago. But I don't know if you've done this with your parents, or both of you are parents, so maybe your kids do it to you. You give advice till you're blue in the face, and you just do your own thing. And then somebody from outside says the same exact thing, and then it takes for some reason, and then you do it. So that's what happened to me. And so Adriana gave me had the instructions on how to do it. So between Kate and Adriana, I'm heading to a good place here. So yeah, so I'm very grateful for that.
That's
So
awesome.
yeah, and that will bring us to today's guest. And believe it or not, we're less than a month away from the Boston Marathon, and we have two Boston Marathon veterans on our show today, Kerry and Chris. And this, but Kerry's first year was last year, so this will be the first year that you guys will be doing at the same time. So this is exciting. So Chris had been on episodes 51 and 52 when he did his first Boston Marathon, and that's when it first came back from COVID. When the year they did it in October, and he's done it again since then. So I'd love to welcome Chris back to the show. It's Chris Marino. Hey,
Hi,
Chris.
Paul. Hi, Carrie.
Hello,
Thanks. Thanks
welcome.
again. Thanks again for welcoming me back.
Yeah, this is great. Now, did you have something that you'd like to add to the grateful list?
Oh gosh, I mean, I've been living
Yeah.
in a universe of gratitude for over a year now. Quite honestly, I'm just very grateful to be here and to be able to share my story with you guys and with whoever's listening and going to listen after. So that's
Yes.
really what I'm grateful for, just
Oh,
to be here.
definitely. I had
That's a
a
huge
feeling.
reason to be grateful for.
Yes,
The
as you'll hear. Yeah.
one.
It's incredible, such an incredible story. But that we have a lot of new different listeners from the last time you were on, and they might not have caught the last episode. So we can start from the beginning, because I'd really like to get, well, not only you have an incredible story yourself, but I'm sure you'd like to bring up how you first started with the Boston Marathon. You'd like to talk about your son Braden and the ALD, because not a lot of people might not know about this. Was it called the disease ALD, as opposed to A it's so, not ALS, it's ALD. So this is something that people might not be aware of, and like to bring attention to it. So if you'd like to,
Yeah,
talk about that.
the longer, scarier word is adrenoleukodystrophy, and AKA, otherwise known as ALD. ALD is really the sort of the abbreviation for it. But yeah, so that's really the main reason for me running Boston, other than it had always been a dream of mine, or it'd been a dream of mine for many, many years before I was actually able to do it. But being able to do it for the first time back in what ended up being October of 2021, the primary reason for me running that was to raise money and awareness for ALD. My son Braden, was diagnosed in early 2019. So it's been 5 years almost exactly, since he was diagnosed. He was 10 years old at the time. He's 15, soon to be 16, actually, this week. He's a sophomore in high school now. He's doing great. He's on medication daily. He has annual MRIs every year because there's a cerebral component to the disease. We could talk a little bit more about that. But as it stands today, he's doing very well. And, so when he was diagnosed in early, like I said, 2019, my wife Katie and I, obviously we were shocked and devastated by the diagnosis. It was very terrifying. If you go into Google and just look up what ALD is, it gives a lot of really scary information. But once you dig in a little bit more, you find that, yes, it's very, very scary, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. So we spent 2019 primarily educating ourselves, excuse me, around the disease. And sort of early 2020 is when we decided to, get off our butts and get busy, so to speak. And I'm happy to say that since that time, we've raised over $150,000 for his neurologist, Dr. Florian Eichler at Mass General Hospital. And so it's been quite a journey, quite a road. But yes, again, just to get back to the original point, Boston was really a launching pad for me to be able to raise awareness and money for that.
And people can find that with the hashtag. Ooh, left my brain. B hashtag.
So if you do hashtag B fights ALD,
Fights.
yeah, it'll take you right to it'll the first link will be to our Mass General fundraising page. It has a little bit more information there around what ALD is and what we've done to date. And yeah, so
Did he have to do the MRIs more? As it was it more frequently, and now it's finally like down to a year, or was it pretty much that before?
I'm probably going to get the actual ages not perfect, but up until the age of, I believe, 12, they recommend that the children get MRIs every 6 months. With Brayden, at this point, we've been doing them annually for the last couple of years. But yeah, when you're younger, they want to have those MRIs more often, because the cerebral component of the disease will actually present on the MRI before it will present, outwardly with the patient. So, for example, if there is a cerebral component, the person that the I'm going to use the word patient, the patient would present with neurological type issues, hearing, processing. They may be characterized as having behavioral issues in school. So these things present themselves before an actual diagnosis is made. And oftentimes that has real catastrophic events, because once the neurological conditions occur, you can't reverse whatever damage is done. And there are oftentimes children are caught, with this disease too late. And that's what we were seeing. When you go into Google and you just do a quick search on ALD in Google, you'll see that oftentimes, the patients present with these neurological symptoms and there's nothing that can be done to help them. And they end up in a vegetative state, and oftentimes pass away within a couple of years. In Braden's situation, he was diagnosed a little bit differently. For a number of years before he was actually diagnosed, when he would get sick, he would get very, very sick. He would be very lethargic. He would oftentimes vomit, and really sort of just vomit once, as my memory serves, and then just lay in bed all day and just be really sick. And that happened on numerous times. We'd travel, and there was at least a couple of occasions traveling where he would get very sick, and we would actually end up in the ER wherever we were traveling. And eventually it got to the point where, again, in 2019, he had an episode where he was very sick. And after about 3 days of laying on the couch, my wife Katie said, "Something is just not right. I'm taking him to the doctor." And she took him to the doctor. The doctor said he frankly looks horrible. He needs to go to the ER. He looked dehydrated. He just did not look good. And we went to the emergency room. They administered fluids, ran some tests. His numbers were still, even with the fluids and the things they were giving him, his numbers were still not where they should have been. And at that point, they were able to diagnose him with adrenal insufficiency, which is it's a they call it a phenotype of ALD. And you can have adrenal insufficiency and not have ALD, so it gets a little confusing there. But so he was diagnosed early on with in that emergency room visit with adrenal insufficiency. And essentially what that means is his adrenal glands weren't functioning properly. So our adrenal glands kick in when we're under duress or stress or we're sick. You know, it releases chemicals that help us to fight, you know, those issues. And so his adrenal glands weren't functioning properly. So essentially his body was shutting down when he would get sick. And so they said, you know, this is what he's going to need. He's going to need to be on medication and it's going to be a lifetime thing. And also we're going to test him for this other thing. And at the time, we had never heard of it. We didn't know what it was. And thankfully they did test him. In fact, if my memory serves correctly, there was a student, an attending, or it might even been a the ER physician. My son Braden was always very dark to the point like his skin color was always very dark. He always looked like he had just come back from Aruba. Even if it was February, he looked very tan. And people would constantly ask, like, where did you guys go on vacation? Because he had a year on tan. And turns out that one of the doctors there noticed the coloring of his skin and coupled that with the adrenal insufficiency and suspected this other thing that we had never heard of. And so that's what prompted the testing for that for the adrenal leukodystrophy. They said to us at the time, you know, don't worry, we're going to test him for this. Highly unlikely that he has it. It took several days to get that test result back. So we are learning about adrenal insufficiency and kind of coming to terms with that diagnosis. And then we did get the diagnosis that he was positive for this other thing called adrenal leukodystrophy, which my wife and I had never heard of. My wife said to me at the time, do not look it up. They wanted to run a second test because he was in the hospital just to make sure that the first test wasn't a false positive. They ran the second test. That one came back positive as well. And that morning, when we received that second diagnosis, we were obviously devastated because if you've never heard of it, you Google it. Like I said, it's devastating. The news you read about it is very, very scary. And so we were terrified. And we reached out to our good friends up the street. They have a son who also has a rare disease. And she was able to find a website called ALD Connect and said, you might want to reach out to these people and see if they can offer you some guidance because we were really in a dark place. And my wife reached out to them, and within 15 minutes, our phone rang. This is like a Tuesday morning. Pretty early in the morning, our phone rang, and it was Dr. Eichler, Braden's neurologist. He wasn't at the time. So Dr. Eichler, you know, had a conversation with Katie on the phone and explained to her that it's not necessarily, you know, terminal for Braden. But we do want to get you in like today or tomorrow to get an MRI done to make sure there's no cerebral activity. So we did that, and that first one came back all clear, which people in the ALD community live by those two words when you go get the MRI, because you really want it to be all clear. You don't want to see any of the cerebral activity, obviously. And so yeah, so that was February of 2019. And as I said, the first year, that year we spent really, you know, researching, getting to know folks within the community. We went to our first ALD Connect, which is the website that our neighbor put us in touch with. We attended a conference that November, met a lot of really great folks there, some who have become really good friends of ours and support system. And so that was, as I said, November 2019. And then really 2020 is when we really started looking at what can we do what can we do? We don't want to sit around and feel sorry for ourselves. And so that's when we started fundraising. And of course, the pandemic hit, and I did some other things as a result of that that we could certainly talk about. But yeah, that's when we really started fundraising, and that's where we are to date.
That's
Attention to it.
a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot to unpack there. So he goes for MRIs every year now, right? So there's what, like, is his prognosis now that he's on like the right course of treatment and stuff, like the cerebral stuff kind of starts to wane in severity, or is that still something that's that can instantly switch on a dime?
Unfortunately, the latter. So he'll never really be completely in the clear, necessarily. There's always that sort of looming on the horizon. Anyone who goes through MRIs or that sort of thing for these type diagnosis, there's a word that's thrown around called scanxiety, and that's very, very real, for all of us involved, because you really don't obviously want to see any of that activity, for obvious reasons, because that opens up a whole other world of treatment or non-treatment as it is. And but that being said, if you were to meet Braden, he is a perfectly, and I hate to use the word normal, he's a perfectly perfect 15, soon to be 16-year-old. He skis, he plays every instrument under the sun, he's self-taught, he's a terrific student, he's a voracious reader. I mean, he lives life, and you would never know that there's, and again, there's, I don't want to say normal and not normal, because it's not
No, I get
that.
it. I get it.
Yeah, you wouldn't know. You
I
never know.
get it
Yeah.
100%.
Right. You wouldn't know that he has this and that we're dealing with this. It's you would never know that. And that's part of the reason that we as a family are doing what we're doing, because a lot of people, so many people have never heard of it. It is a very rare disease. I think one in 17,000. And so we are really about raising as much awareness as we can, of the disease. And not to, because it is a lot, and I realize, I mean, I could talk about this all day, and because it's very involved, and really what I shared is just the tip of the iceberg. But there's another component to it, and not to, confuse things or add more to it, but there's another component that's called AMN, adrenomyelin neuropathy, adrenomyelin, gosh, I wish my wife were here to correct me, but AMN is the acronym for that. And that's a neuro, that's the, it's a neurodegenerative piece of adrenoleukodystrophy. And so as people with ALD age, they will develop symptoms of AMN. And those symptoms will present as issues with gait, balance, bladder, sexual function. And so these things are also on the horizon for us. And that's part of the work and research that Dr. Eichler is doing at his Harvard lab, and why we year after year are doing what we're doing, and why we're pushing so hard to raise as much money as we can. Because I'm sure there's people out there that are like, okay, like every year with this, but it's a race against the clock. And it's not just Braden, it's also my wife Katie. She adrenoleukodystrophy is an X-linked genetic disease, and so the mothers are also ALD patients, and will also suffer the consequences of AMN as they age. And so it's not only my son, it's also my wife. And so, again, this is work that Dr. Eichler is studying, and trying to find a cure, or something to help with that. And so it literally is a race against the clock. And so that's why we're always pushing for money
Yep. No,
for
I get
people to
it.
donate. We've raised $150,000 and we're super proud of that. That's $150,000 that 5 years ago didn't exist. And it's courtesy of, folks that are listening to this or will listen. We've got so much support, so many people in our corner, and we're so appreciative of it. And we know that times are hard for everybody, and but it's we're still going to ask, and we're still going to hope that people give, and donate and support us in this way. It's because it is very, very, very important. And yeah.
Yeah, it's that's the it can the donating that money and raising awareness is huge, especially when it's maybe something that's not typically seen in the normal typical diseases, if you can even say it that way, for what people see. And so and they tend to be a lot of the times for what I deal with my cerebral palsy, it's invisible for me. Like, I don't look like your typical CP patient at all. And there are so many of those diseases out there that are very much invisible to the naked eye. You don't see what people are struggling with it. You don't see what they're going through. And it can be really scary. Like, I remember when I was growing up, and again, like, my cerebral palsy is so light in compared to some of my other peers that I've grown up with. But I can remember my parents just trying everything to get information about what it was, where I was going to be down the line. Because when I was younger, there wasn't a lot of information about it. And there's still not a ton of information about it. And so when you have parents like yourself that are pushing to get funding, to get resources, to get information out there to people and to other parents and families that are going through it so that they know that they're not alone. That's huge, right? Like that's like because support in that kind of a situation is such a big component of getting through this. Like having people that understand what you're going through and the terrifying aspects of the disease and all the little thoughts that you're having, having that resources in that community is a big, big plus to have. So you guys are doing incredible, incredible work.
Thank you, Carrie. That means a lot.
I also love before this diagnosis, Braden was very active from what I remember you telling me before, and then then that's when you notice what he gets sick, and then you'd be down for the count. And now I feel like it sounds like he's really adapting well, and he's living his life. So that's incredible strength on his part as well. So.
Yeah, he definitely is. He definitely is. In fact, he was at one point, this is kind of an interesting story. He was very interested and very active in gymnastics when he was 7, 8, 9, and he had a real aptitude for it. I mean, it was pretty incredible to watch his acceleration in it. And then I think he was not feeling great. And the reason was he had undiagnosed adrenal insufficiency and was really fighting a battle within himself to feel good. And it got to a point where he just really couldn't do it anymore. And on top of that, he was also having what we thought was like anxiety. These are all things that sort of led up to the diagnosis. Hindsight being 20/20, looking back on it, it's pretty awful because we were having him see therapists and different things. Like he'd wake up in the morning, for example, on a school day prior to not feeling great, he would wake up and, I'm ready to go to school. He was excited about school. And it got to a point where he'd wake up and just be like, I can't go to school today. And we would say, Braden, you got to go to school. Like, he's not, quote, sick. He's not throwing up. He doesn't have a fever. He's not coughing. He's just like, I don't feel good. And we didn't know what it was. We didn't know if it was like anxiety. So we had him seeing therapists and all these different people to try to fix whatever was broken. And he was fighting this battle. And it really took that event where he was very sick at home, and my wife said, "I'm taking him to the doctor to change all that." And so I share this only to say that oftentimes, folks don't feel great and get really awful diagnoses and then continue to be sick, right? And with Braden, he was really sick and yeah, got this really awful diagnosis. But at the same time, he was put on the right medication to address the adrenal insufficiency. So he was feeling better. He immediately felt better. He had more energy. He was more available. Like it was just, that was the only blessing of that episode of being diagnosed with this horrible disease. What did that disease was that it actually addressed the struggles he was having prior to being diagnosed. Yes, there's a whole bunch of shit that goes along with it, but there was a sort of a positive of that whole process. And that might be me looking at the positives as opposed to just the negatives, but it really did change him in that moment. And he was dancing and just feeling so much better. And yeah, so, anyways.
That's huge. It's like when you're living inside of a body that just doesn't feel right, and you can't put a finger on what's going on, and everything that you do doesn't feel normal. Like it's not that you're it's just off. You're always constantly off. And so to finally be able to feel normal and feel like everybody else, that it's huge. That's like it. I don't think that's you spinning up like trying to find a positive. I think that really is like a positive note, and everything is that he was able to regain that piece of him that had been missing, and that he couldn't understand why he couldn't get back.
Right, for sure.
Yeah, we can start. That's only part of this the story. I mean, you've gotten to the meat of it yet. So, all right, when we had you on last, you had run your first Boston Marathon, and then since then you had run a second one. Now, how was it doing it the second time? Was it a different feel?
Yeah,
It's
so
been a little while, so.
well, I don't know if you remember, Paul, but so we diagnosis early 2019, took a year, 2020. We all know what happened in 2020. January of 2020, when things were still normal, I, through a friend of a friend, was able to get a bib for Boston for what would have been April of 2020. Which was that was a miracle into itself. I threw a note up on Facebook sort of saying, "Hey, like this is a long shot, but does anyone know anyone?" And a father of a boy that I actually coached in Little League said, "I think I can help," and put me in contact with someone else who put me in contact with somebody. And so I was able to get a bib. But then the world fell apart and in March, and I had already been training up till that point, starting in January through March. And we were fundraising, and I was using Boston to fundraise, and then they took Boston away, and they didn't know when it was going to be back. And so my wife Katie and I were talking about different things that we could do. We actually had arranged to have an in-person fundraiser that got canceled because of COVID, and that's when I decided to run all the streets in my town. So I actually did that in 2020 that summer, and then there was a virtual Boston. I don't know if you guys remember this or not, in September of 2020. So I did that in my town. And then 2021 rolls around. And again, Boston was postponed. So that's when I decided, okay, well, what can we do to raise money, to raise awareness and money? And that's when I did the Goggins 4x4x48 challenge. So that was March of 2021.
Okay,
God, it seems
so
like
that was running 4 miles every 4 hours. For 48 hours.
That was an absolute blast. In fact, my wife and I, as I we were just talking about this the other day. I come back from a run that was just a Carrie, you could probably relate, that it was just a drag. We're in the later stages of training, and I think I'm just feeling tired from all the miles. And I said to my wife, I'm like, I don't think I'm cut out for marathons. I
I
don't,
had
it's
that
not as sexy
conversation
as
with
it used to
myself
be.
yesterday. I was running and I was like, I'm not cut out for this. Like, this is just, I'm done. I feel
Good.
you.
You can relate. It's so, it's such a thing. And so I said to my wife, I'm like, gosh, you know, the 4x4x48, it was hard, but man, it was so fun. And I look back on that with such fond memories. We first of all, we raised so much money over that one weekend. I mean, I push out, you know, on Facebook and emails, and you know, we were communicating the normal way with folks, short of going door to door and picking up the phone and calling people and basically begging for money. And it's a grind. It's hard, and I get it. People have donated in the past, and but it's a grind. And unless you actually fundraised, I don't think people realize what a grind it is. And it's not easy to ask people for money. It's just not. You're really putting yourself out there, and but it is. It's so important. So, anyways, the 4x48 was just, it was such a thing. And so we were talking about it, and I said, you know, this marathon stuff, really, these miles, and I'm doing it basically alone at this point. And just because of the timing, I've chosen to do the long runs. And so I'm basically training on my own. So I was like, oh, we should just do the 48 again, you know, let's just do that again, because we raised so much money so quickly. And I think people were really engaged. I think people wanted to, A, see if I was going to finish, B, fi see if I was going to like quit, or C, maybe even end up on the side of the road dead. I don't know. There was some drama involved with that, I think, that people gravitated towards and seemed to enjoy. That was the feedback that I got from that. So anyway, so that was March of 2021. And then was it, yeah, so that October was the first Boston. So October of 2021, I did my first Boston. That was just incredible. I loved everything about it. Boston for me, I know I probably expressed this, Paul, on the last time we spoke, was just a dream race for me my entire life, being born and raised in New England. It was, you know, I was in my late 20s with some friends at the base of Heartbreak Hill. Paul, you might remember this story. And I was watching people, you know, approaching Heartbreak Hill, and I was so moved by it. And I mean, I was emotional. I was feeling everything. Excuse me. And seeing people run that, I just was like, wow, this is just incredible. They're not elite athletes. They're normal people that are just doing this amazing thing. So I was incredibly moved by it. And I said to myself that day, I'm like, I'm going to do that. I'm going to run a marathon, but I'm also going to run Boston. And this goes back even further. I mean, I have a memory from when I was 7 years old. For folks from Massachusetts, the marathon's on Patriots Day. It's a holiday here, and the Red Sox play that morning. And my dad actually took me out of school because I was from New Hampshire and we didn't have the day off. So my dad took me out of school one day when I was seven, took me to the baseball game, and we were out of the game into Kenmore Square with tens of thousands of people cheering on the marathon. And I was like, what is this? It was louder than the baseball game. And so that's in my brain. So anyway, so when I got to finally do it, after all the COVID pauses, after the virtual run, one around my town, when I finally got to do it was such an experience. It was such an amazing experience. And more importantly, we were able to do it, and the money that we raised went to Dr. Eichler. So because of the connection, because I applied to join, you know, a couple different teams as a charity runner. I wasn't a qualified runner. I applied to join a couple of charity teams and got accepted onto a couple of teams. But my wife, Katie, and I really wanted this money to go to Dr. Eichler. It would be great if it went to Boston Children's Hospital or Mass General Hospital for whatever they're using the money for. But we really targeted the money that we wanted to raise to go to Dr. Eichler. So the fact that I got this bib donated to me allowed us to do just that. So yeah, so that was October. So we raised some money doing that. And then there's a pretty quick turnaround to the second one, which was in April of 2022. So I was in really good shape at that point. Probably, yeah, I was in really good shape at that point, and I had a good run, the second one as well. And I mean, anyone that's done Boston will tell you it's an absolute joy to do. It's the greatest race, I think, that there is. I mean, it's just, there's nothing like it. From start to finish, there's people along the course. And every town that you run through is just a different vibe. It's just such a celebration. I had done the Falmouth Road Race on the Cape for my raising money for my neighbors for a bunch of years. Falmouth is, if anyone's done that, it's kind of sort of like that. Falmouth is 7 miles, and but Boston is 26 miles of just joy and exhilaration and people just celebrating the runners. And it's and to be able to do it and to raise the money and the awareness that we are is just, it's like, that's what it's all about for me.
Not like, and like, you don't, Boston, like those crowds carry you. So it's not like you need to constantly remind yourself of the why that you're doing it, but to be raising that money and have that why in the back of your head is something that's going to keep you going when you hit those, heartbreak or those little tiny hills that seem so monumental towards the end of the race because you've been. Maybe you went out too fast, or like because the crowds. I know, like with me, like I took off and knew that I shouldn't have been going the pace that I was going, and knew that I was going to pay the price when I got to the back end of the course. But like it's so hard to slow down because those crowds just carry you, and like it's so hard to like just slow down or take a walk break or like regroup yourself because people are just cheering your name and. Just like telling you to go and like the noise. I remember coming around the corner, onto Boylston, and I had like my playlist on, like I had been listening to music, and at that point, I had had my music pretty loud, and the crowds were drowning. Like they're like you don't need music because they're just gonna drown it out completely. Man, what a just like the whole thing. Like I'm getting goosebumps just thinking about it and like reliving those moments in my head. And yeah, like so to have that why of, I'm doing this to raise money and, for a good cause and all of that just adds to that the meaning behind running something like that.
So true. How many have you done, Carrie? I missed
So
that.
last year was my first.
Oh, okay.
So this will be my second year doing it. Because I BQ'd at Boston last year to run again. So I'm in the adaptive wave for it. So
Oh, congratulations.
yeah. So it took about 5 years to get me to a point where I was able to hit under the adaptive requirements. And I've been grinding away and finally like that dream. Like it's been just like you. It's always been a dream to run it. I'm, my family's from Lowell and Boston area, like that's where I grew up, and I have memories of the Boston Marathon from when I was a kid, and from like being at Children's Hospital and getting treatment for, my CP and being around that whole environment, and saying someday I want to do that, I want to run that someday, and so that was my big like, oh my God, like I'm finally here, like this can't be real, like I can't believe I'm running it. Because that was something that I never thought would be even possible to do. Like I was like, there's no way I can hit like a 3.5 hour marathon. Like there's no way that's gonna happen. So for them to have an adaptive and their adaptive program is incredible. Like after running New York and running a bunch of different marathons that have adaptive components with it. Boston stands like at the top of the list with how they treat their athletes, communication, getting people from the start line and at the finish line and making sure that they're okay from point A to point B. The whole experience is just incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Wow, Carrie, that's really something to hear. You're giving me goosebumps.
Thank
Congratulations. I'm proud of
you.
you. That's
Congratulations to
really,
you.
thank you. I dreamt of qualifying at one point in my younger years, I guess, of running, and worked towards it pretty hard for a little bit. And life
Yeah.
and different things have happened to me along the way that have put a sort of halt to that. But yeah, it's an honor to be able to be able to run it. People come from all over the world for a reason to run this race, and yeah, it's great. I can't believe it's 3 weeks from tomorrow. I just it's Did
Yeah.
you do your long one this weekend?
So I did it. I have to do it after our chat. So I've been doing my long runs at the end of the day because of just the way that everything's been lining up for me. So I'll do my long run after we're here. I think I'm going to have to split it between outside and treadmill stuff today just because of all the
Snow.
snow that we had. This morning, I went out to see if it was going to be possible, and like it's all rutted and just it's
Oh,
not.
yeah.
And like my seat, like I am such a klutz because of my cerebral palsy. Like my left leg doesn't always cooperate that's supposed to be, and I'm prone to twisting my ankles because of my imbalance issues. And so the last thing I need is to be 3 weeks out from Boston and twist my ankle and be done for it. So
Yeah.
yeah.
Wow. Well, good luck. I mean,
Thank
that's really
you.
something. Yeah.
Yeah, it's gonna be good.
And actually, I was going to say the fact that you're doing it later is probably smart, smarter than doing it earlier because, I mean, I'm not starting. I think my wave is at 11:15, and I'm a morning runner. I think I know that that was a challenge the last couple of times that I did it. I think my body was, what are you doing? Because you have to obviously feed yourself and you have to do it sort of properly and you get into a rhythm of it, right? When you're used to training, eat something, give it an hour, go for a run, do the goos or the gels or whatever, drink, and then you're done. And this, the marathon for me is going to basically start when I'd be done. So it's trying to figure out that the nutrition along the way, I think, is the hardest part. In my experience of doing it the last couple of times, I think I've got it kind of dialed in. I did my last long run on Friday. I did 20, and I think I finally figured out the nutrition piece, at least during that run, where I felt great the whole time. And so I'm hoping that that translates 3 weeks from tomorrow, but we'll see. But it's a balance,
It's such a balance.
yeah.
Nutrition is probably the one thing out of all, like, and I've been running marathons for a couple of years now. Like, I've been doing endurance stuff. And it's the one area that I just can't seem to align the right way. Like, I've tried different things, and I'll think that I have a system in place that works. And then, like, I'll put that into the next effort, and my body will be like, nope, we're not doing that. And so then it's back to the drawing board. So nutrition is just one of those areas for me that is like this constant, just like, we're gonna try this time, and we're gonna try it. Like, we think we have it into control, and then it just goes to the
Yeah.
wasteland. So
Yeah, I mean I've had such horrible experiences with it too. Like the goo, literally goo, the brand name goo, right? GU would upset my stomach so terribly that I gave up on all goos altogether. So then I started trying the waffle, like the honey stinger waffles or the honey stinger kind of things that are just honey. I tried peanut butter. I think I finally found the right one. It might be too late to share with you at this point because you're probably not going to get your hands on it for this long run. But I found one that I utilized during this last one that was great. I feel like it just gave me the right amount of energy, did not upset my stomach at
Yeah, that's
all.
my big thing.
Yes, that's a big thing. I'll share it with you offline,
Yeah, definitely.
the name, because I don't even remember what it's called at this point. But yeah, so I'm with
Thank you.
you. It's the nutrition piece is always a struggle, but yeah.
It's such a balance.
Nutrition after the race is super easy. It's eat whatever you want, brush whatever you want for like a week. That's a piece of cake. It's the during the race piece that's a little more challenging.
Yeah, it's so hard. And to like be like, vigilant about making sure that it's going into your system when it's supposed to be going in your system when you're running, because that's my other thing. Like, I had to train myself that even if I don't feel like, if I'm like, oh, I don't need it, like, I'll be fine, like, I don't need to take it right now, I have to like be like, Carrie, take your nutrition, get it into your system, because if you don't take it into your system, it's gonna be a nightmare 2 miles down the road. My leg's gonna lock up, and then it's just gonna be absolute misery for however long is left of the race. And for me, my wall is usually 18 or 19 miles, and that's usually where I hit my wall. And I struggle from that to about 22, and then I can usually pull myself out of it because you're in that final stretch and you're just like, I can do it. Like, I'm at the point where, like, It's a 5K, I can get through it, but that little chunk of time is always just, it feels like an eternity.
Oh, for sure. I've bonked on a, fortunately for me, not on either of the Bostons that I've run, but I've definitely bonked on a couple of runs. And there is no worse feeling than when you recognize that you're actually bonking. And like you say, it was like mile 18. And boy, those last miles are awful.
And if you
Awful. It's
start there,
already awful, even if you feel good, it's
right?
awful.
And you start like doing the math of like how many miles you have left, and you're like, oh my God, I still have so many more miles to go. And it's just like this
Perpetual
snowball.
cycle. Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. Yep. Isn't it fun? That's why
Oh,
we
it's so
need to
much
do the,
fun.
you should do the 48 with me.
I would be up for that. I totally would be. I love doing stuff like that. So, like in the other realm of running, I love doing OCR. I love doing ultra runs and stuff like that. Like that's like I did my first ultra at in Fayetteville for Spartan in 2021. So I trained. I was supposed to do it in 2020, and obviously that didn't happen. And so I stayed fit all the way through to the following year and did my first ultra. And what an experience that was. That was like so cool to see that you can like push your body to, limits that you didn't even know existed that you could do. And that's all mind over matter, right?
How far was the ultra that you did?
So that one was 31.5 miles with obstacles. So you basically do the beast course, obstacle course thing twice through. And so I picked Fayetteville because it was flat. And so it was a little bit more easy on my body. I didn't account for the fire ants that South Carolina has in it and ended up failing a couple obstacles and having to do burpees and chose the wrong location to do burpees into a
Oh.
fire ant pit. So the second lap was a little rough, but yeah, it was really just it was a cool experience. And this September, I'm going out to Illinois to do a race that's called the Bearded Challenge, which is obstacle course ultra running stuff where you just do laps until your time's up. So I'm excited. Boston, I love doing marathons and road racing like that, but I'm really excited to get back into doing some of the cool, like more ultra really fun, like what you're doing with the fours and obstacle course racing stuff.
Yeah, I've got a little experience with that. I did a couple of the Tough Mudders, like 10, 12 mile ones, not ultra ones, with some of my old high school buddies. And th those are great, great times. And you talking about it and just me thinking about it now makes me want to get the band back together and get back there.
They're so much fun. They're just
They're
a,
really,
they're
really fun.
they're it takes the monot like it takes the monotony out of like those miles. They're still like, and I'm not saying that it's easy because there have been definitely there's been some OCR races that I've done where I've wanted to walk off the course because it's been difficult. Like Killington up in Vermont is one of the harder OCR races that we have, and it's a challenge, but it's just so much fun. And like when you get an obstacle or like you're with your group of friends and you're just like running through the woods or like helping each other through things, it's, and you're laughing about it, it's just it's a different vibe than that serious like major marathon, like here we go, we're gonna, set the record and we're gonna go and we're gonna get it done. Whereas with OCR, it's like, we're just gonna go out, we're gonna have fun and run through the woods a little bit and hike up some mountains a couple hundred times and it's gonna be a good time.
Yeah, that's
It's like
great.
you're a kid again playing. That's what
Right.
it
It's
feels
one
like.
big
Yeah,
playground,
exactly.
with some really heavy like carries and stuff along the way that can I get to do it with my daughter last year. She did her first like real sprint and it was so much fun to run that with her and to like see her resiliency and just, where other adults were giving up climbing the mountain and carrying sandbags and what have you. She paced herself, would take breaks when she needed to, but she did every single piece of that course by herself. And it wasn't like I wasn't like, you need to do this, like you have to finish it. It was just like she's set the goal that she was going to go through it, and she was going to do what she could by herself, and she did it. She kicked my butt up the hill. Like she took off, and I think she beat me by like at least 3 minutes to the top of the hill. She was like standing at the top going, I've been waiting here for you. Like, what's taking so long?
All right, so Chris, you want to talk about the little event that happened in December?
Yeah, I guess we got a little off track there for a minute. It's fun to talk about that stuff. So December 3rd, 2022, I was out for a run on a Saturday morning and started to feel nauseous, real upset stomach. Stopped running and walked for a little bit and got to a point where I had to sit down, and I was just feeling really uncomfortable, and I've never sat down on a run before. And I was only like 3 miles into the run at this point. And I called my wife, Katie, and I told her that I was not feeling well and that I was going to walk home. I was about a mile from home at that point, and got myself up and started to walk back the way that I originally had come from. And the pain, the upset stomach sort of moved into pain in my chest and felt like a real heaviness in my chest. And I tried to make myself vomit, thinking that it was something maybe that I ate the night before. I wasn't quite sure what was going on, and nothing would come up. And I ended up crossing the street to sit against this tree in a yard, and called my wife again and said that, I wasn't going to be able to make it home, and could she come pick me up? And Katie said absolutely. And at that point, I had laid down on my side because I was really uncomfortable. I put myself into the fetal position, and as soon as I had done that, a car had passed and immediately pulled over, and this woman got out, and she was dressed in scrubs and identified herself as a nurse, asked me if I was okay, and I told her that I actually wasn't okay, and she asked me if I was having chest pains, and I told her I was, and she gave me her jacket put under my head. And at that point, things are kind of a blur. I know some folks came out of the house in the yard that I'd stopped in. Eventually, my wife Katie and my older son Ryan showed up, and someone had called 911 at that point because an ambulance had showed up, and they loaded me into the ambulance on the way over there. So prior to this, I didn't know what was going on. I thought I had, food poisoning or something. I didn't know what was happening. And on the way to the hospital, the EMT had told me that I was having a cardiac event, and they gave me some fentanyl to help me to relax. My wife was actually in the passenger seat of the ambulance, and I found out afterwards the driver actually told my wife that I was having a heart attack, which I'm not quite sure why they would tell her that, but they told her that on the way to the hospital. And I got to the hospital, and they prepped the cath lab, and took about 90 minutes actually to get me to the cath lab. So they had taken all my running stuff off and got me ready to go back there. I was at that point feeling very relaxed because of whatever medication, the fentanyl they had given me. So I wasn't under any duress. I wasn't processing things in my brain properly. So I didn't really know what was going on at that point. And so they brought me back to the cath lab, and they ended up putting a one stent into the major artery of my heart. I didn't know this at the time, obviously. And as soon as they had done that, the doctor said, how are you feeling, Chris? And gosh, I remember this like so distinctly. And as soon as he said that, I said, I feel great. Like I feel like I can go finish my run. Like I feel unbelievable. And he said, that's good. Let's give me a couple minutes. We're gonna do whatever, and I'll explain to you what happened. And so he After a couple of minutes, he sort of swung. There's this big TV just to my left, monitor. He swung it around, put it right in front of me, and he asked me if I'd heard of, if I knew what a widowmaker was. And I said to him, I did. And he said, well, you had a widowmaker heart attack. And I said, okay. Like, how do you process that? And he explained to me a little bit more about what it was. And then he was curious about how I ended up in the hospital, where I was prior to what I was doing. And I explained to him, you know, what I just explained to you guys, that I was out for a run you know, took an ambulance to the hospital. And he said to me that I was very lucky. First of all, he said that, you know, the survival rate for a widowmaker heart attack is anywhere between 10 and 20%. Really, time is of the essence. Getting to, you know, getting to the right place and getting the right treatment is what will save someone's life. So he explained all this to me, and he basically said to me that, you know, had things been different, you know, I probably wouldn't be alive. And so that was something. And yeah, and so my wife was there, and my running buddy, Augie, was there, and my wife came back, you know, to the cath lab. I think we were in the cath lab still, and just, you know, it was pretty emotional, and but also really happy. You know, I was just like, this is crazy. I can't believe that I had a heart attack. Like, how is that even possible? You know, I had absolutely no symptoms prior to my heart attack. Oftentimes, you know, folks will obviously experience, like, you know, a heaviness or shortness of breath, excuse me, shortness of breath, or there'll be pains in their shoulder and their teeth,
Tingling or something, yeah.
something that indicates there's blockages or something. So when those things happen, you can go into the hospital and they can take a look at what's happening and maybe catch it before it happens. I had none of that. It was explained to me after the fact. You know, I see a couple different cardiologists, and they both have said that for me, because I had no symptoms, that there was, when I was out running, there was a rupture. So I had some, I had some calcium buildup. I have genetic high cholesterol that I had just started medication for 3 months prior to my heart attack. And so what they said happened to me was a piece of that buildup broke off and created the occlusion. It basically ruptured and created the blockage. And so it just, I had 100% blockage. It shut that artery down immediately. And so obviously no blood was getting to the heart at that point. So as I say, there was no warning signs of this. And the good news about being in the cath lab is, you know, they put dye into all of your arteries so they can determine whether there's any other blockages or anything else going on. And that was the only one. Everything else was clear, fortunately. All, like, everything else was good. So I have, you know, there was nothing else to be concerned about as far as having a second heart attack or something else happening down the road. I'm on a newer class of cholesterol medication now. I'm on something called Repatha. I take a monthly, it's an on-body monthly device, so it's not a statin. And so I do it once a month. It's like a 5-minute self-injector. And my numbers, my cholesterol numbers have been fantastic. So, you know, knock on wood on the other side of it. And I'm doing great. You know, I'll always be on, you know, I take medication obviously now. So I went from a guy that never took medication to now I'm on medication twice a day, and I've got to sort of manage that. And so, but yeah, I'm just really, really thankful to have survived that and to be here. I haven't really shared before on it on any other real podcast, but I did share on social media. So those that are on social media will know this, but literally 3 weeks prior to my having a heart attack. So on November 12th, the reason I remember that date so vividly is it's the day before my birthday. On November 12th, my wife actually had a seizure. And so literally 3 weeks to the day, I found her in our bathroom on the floor having a seizure. And that was, to that point, the most terrifying thing I'd ever experienced, because she had never had one before. And the reason I share that is I was dealing with sort of the PTSD of that, of finding her and calling 911 and giving her chest compressions because I thought she was dying on the floor in front of me. And then 3 weeks later, I'm having a heart attack. So we've had our trials for sure. And thankfully, you know, my wife's doing great. She's not had another seizure episode. And but it's crazy that you know, the things that life throws at you and when you least expect it. So yeah, so that was November. She had the seizure. December, I had the heart attack, and I started cardiac rehab. I'm sorry. Do you guys want me to stop? Do you have any questions? I don't want to say too much.
No, keep on going. You're good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll hop on after. Yep.
So I started cardiac rehab, which is something that they really encourage folks that have had cardiac events to do. And that was really interesting. I did that over, we live close to Worcester, Massachusetts. So I did that over at a hospital in Worcester. And it was interesting that I'm not a spring chicken. I mean, I'm 54 years old. I was, you know, 53 at the time. I'm no spring chicken, but I was definitely a spring chicken amongst that group. And when you first go to cardiac rehab, they basically sit you down and say, okay, why are you here? And what are your goals? And I told the intake nurse that, you know, I want to run a marathon. And this was like, you know, a couple months, 3 months after I had a heart attack. And she was like, are you insane? Like, you're here to basically walk on the treadmill and, but you know, I felt great. Like after my heart attack, I started walking. I did do a little bit of running, very slowly, very gingerly before cardiac rehab. And then really in cardiac rehab is when I started running again, because while you're there, they hook you up to all the monitors and there's nurses floating around and basically watching your every step.
Yes.
Making sure you're good, making sure. And so I started there with sort of baby steps. So I would do 5 minutes on the treadmill and then 10 minutes running. And I just gradually continued to increase that to the point where I was staying longer in class. So class would end and I would do like 45 minutes on the treadmill, and they would allow me to do that. And they were like, oh, Chris is sticking around to, you know, stay on the treadmill. And they go take their break or whatever. And one nurse would stay with me. So they were really, really kind to me and allowed me to sort of do that. And everything at cardiac rehab was showing perfectly normal, you know, so there was no issues at all to be concerned about, because oftentimes at cardiac rehab, they'll see a little blip or palpitation or something happen and they'll shut you down. They'll make you stop immediately. And so I never had any of that, which was great. But they said to me that we think your goals extend beyond what we can help you with. Mm-hmm. And they recommended to me that I engage with a sports cardiologist. And up until that point, I had done a little bit of online sleuthing and had read a little bit about it. And once they said that, I said, okay, that's really what I need to do. So I actually ended up connecting with sports cardiologist, at Mass General. And so I've been working with him to manage the running piece. So basically he works with people who were athletes that want to get back to doing whatever athletic endeavor they used to do prior to having cardiac issues. And so when I said to him, I want to run a marathon, he said, okay, that's definitely doable. So it was a complete 180 from cardiac rehab. He said, I think you're going to be able to do that just fine. Mm-hmm. And so with him, I did a stress test. It was a year ago. And, you know, he said, let's give it another year you come back, basically on the anniversary, the year anniversary of my heart attack, you come back and we'll do another stress test. And if things look good, so that would have been, this past December, I will green light you to run Boston. So I went back in on the year anniversary of my heart attack, did a second stress test, and did better on that one than I did on the first one. And we sat down after and he said, you're good to go. He said, as long as you don't go crazy out there and try to sprint the race, which he said, I think you'll still do fine, but I would not do that. Just keep it reasonable, listen to your body. And but he gave me the absolute green light. And that was step one in my returning to running the marathon. Step two was sitting down with my wife, Katie, and getting her buy-in. Yep.
The hard part.
Because, she's the most important person to me. And obviously, I don't want to, concern her in any way or give her any undue anxiety around this. Because, this is my thing and it's something that I really want to do. But I don't want to put myself in jeopardy or put fear into other people around this. And but Katie's always super supportive, and she said, just promise me, you'll keep it reasonable. And I have every training run that I do. In fact, I've incorporated a lot more walk breaks into my training.
They work,
And
man. They work. Like walk
oh yeah.
breaks, they like it gives you just that time that you need to like reset everything in your system to continue on without stressing your body out.
100%. Yep. They've worked great for me, Carrie. I mean, I wish I'd given myself permission to do more of that back when I was training a little harder. So I take more frequent walk breaks, and I'm running a much more reasonable, slower pace. And the only thing for me, and this is, the only complaint that I have, and I've done a little bit in, my Dr. Churchill, the sports cardiologist, has said that I can work in different type of, I can do some speed work or I can do some tempo runs if I want. He said once a week, if you want to do that, that's perfectly fine. That's the one thing that I try to do a little bit of that. I do a couple or 3 miles a little bit faster. That's really the one thing that I miss, because doing the same pace for every run every day is a grind, and so mentally it's really taxing. I'm adhering to that. On a marathon day, I'm gonna take my time and I'm gonna enjoy the day, and I'm gonna finish, and that's really my goal. Yeah, that's really the story.
That's incredible. Like you've had quite the last couple of years, and like with your whole family, like you guys have just conquered, every single roadblock that's been in your way, and you've stood in its face and been like, you are not going to tear me down. We are going to keep on going and we are going to push through. And that's so important to be able to have that mantra and mentality, because that's always going to take you forward in life. If you can take it in, feel it, obviously give yourself that moment to grieve whatever is happening, mourn whatever is happening, and then pick yourself back up and be like, all right, how are we going to move past this? That gets you so far in life. And you are walk your whole family is walking proof that resiliency pays off. I can't do speed work because if I do speed work, I mess up my leg. So my coach did strides with me. That's what we did. So like he's like, try to incorporate a couple of different strides throughout the course of your runs that you do, and you pick when you want to do it so that it is not always constantly like a even easy pace stuff. So like he allows me to figure out when I want to do it, and we just kind of in sprinkle it into the mix, and that makes it a little bit easier. Because if I do speed work, every single time I've done it, I've pulled a muscle in my leg and it's knocked me out. So that's my tip for you. I don't know if you do strides, but they've helped to kind of like keep me feeling like I'm pushing myself a little bit harder and advancing my pace a little bit more.
For sure. Yeah. Now, for me at this point, just keep my fingers crossed about being healthy for the next 3 weeks and trying to get to that start line. And thanks for what you said about what we've been through. It's interesting to look back on it. When I talk about it, it really brings it out again and makes it seem so real. But I just, like I said at the beginning of the show, I'm so grateful just for everything, you know, and I try to demonstrate that to my family and every day, you know. It's just, I'm just so incredibly grateful. Some might wonder, my wife might even wonder why I shared, you know, her story about having a seizure, but that's part of my story. You know, that was a real, those couple of weeks prior to my having a heart attack were a real struggle for me emotionally. I had legit PTSD.
Yeah.
Like I could hardly go into our bathroom without it really, you know, upsetting me. And I was up at night, I was having nightmares. I'd roll over and literally at 2 or 3 in the morning and just sit there and listen to see if my wife was breathing. And if I didn't hear her breathing, I would nudge her. And it was a real battle, you know, for a long time. It still is. Things still happen. If she says, I feel this, I am immediately back in that place.
Mm-hmm.
I did therapy for a while after that. And that was incredibly helpful. And my wife and I did some together after my heart attack. So we didn't do this alone. Like, we didn't get through this alone. We got through this with the help of many, many people, not mm-hmm. just therapy, but friends and family. And so many people have been supportive of us. And we're just so fortunate. And I have so much gratitude for life. And when I see people that are like just mean and nasty, I just wonder why. Why are you like mm-hmm. you don't get it. Like, you don't have, it's just, don't do that. Don't be like that. It's just, life's too short.
Exactly.
And unpredictable. And, mm-hmm. you know, this morning, actually, I got some devastating news about a coworker of mine who I worked with for over 20 years, who passed away of cancer. And I got a text from my old boss telling me, and I was just like, Jesus, it's mm-hmm. like this world, you know, it's crazy, you know. Just don't take it for granted. That's my thing. Take nothing for granted.
Yeah, so. You never know when in an instant they can go from everything is fine to everything is not fine and your world is upside down. And I've definitely learned that over the last couple of years, is that you just got to embrace everything and live it to its fullest and not sweat the small stuff and, you know, appreciate the good moments and find support in the bad moments and, you know, just enjoy.
It's just, it would have been so easy just to curl up in a ball and just give up. And, mm-hmm. you know, but I made a decision pretty quickly after having the heart attack that I was not going to do that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that in the, you know, heart attack community, so to speak. You know, I belong to a couple different Facebook support groups, and it's pretty rough out there. I mean, there's, first of all, just the amount of struggle that people are going through after having these events, and it can be a dark place. And I take from that okay, I don't need to be like that. Mm-hmm. I'm fortunate enough to have come out on the other side unscathed, almost. Because oftentimes these situations result in much different outcomes. And so I recognize that I was very, first of all, very lucky to survive, but also very lucky to survive and be the person that I am, not only physically, but mentally. And I think the mental thing is a choice that I make every day. And it's a conscious choice, you know, because again, I see the other side. I can't spend too much time there because it's a dark place. Mm-hmm. And but I do think this is the other thing that's interesting about my story is the cardiologists have said to me that, you know, it was really my physicality, my health prior to the heart attack that resulted in the outcome, had a large part in the outcome that I had. Meaning, if I wasn't running and doing the things that I was doing, if I wasn't in the shape that I was in when I had the heart attack, I probably would have had a different outcome because the heart does suffer damage from that. But if it's strong to start with, right, you have a better chance of having a better outcome. And so that's another reason for me to just keep going, like keep it going, keep the heart going, right? And I don't plan on stopping. As long as I can do it safely, I'm going to keep going. And that's why I like coming and doing these things and sharing it. And if somebody's listening and they feel a little bit inspired, right, to do something, get off the couch or do something different because of maybe something that I said, then that's great. So
Your entire family, your son, Killita, your wife, for
yeah.
sure. And that nurse, I mean, I don't want to like overlook that. What an angel. And I mean, it was just meant to be that you're still with us, because what are the odds that, she happened to be passing by? That is so crazy. Do you keep in touch with her, or do you even know who it is? Did you get her name or anything, or because that you were like all out of it, so.
What a regret, Paul. We did try. First of all, she disappeared like a puff of smoke. As quickly as she showed up, she left. And I think I probably could have done a little bit more, but I did, post on social media, a couple of different local groups. Does anyone know who this person might be? Was not able to find her. I do think about that quite often, though. I would love to find her. Because boy, what a thing to have had her stop like literally immediately.
Because who
And
does that anyway these days? And yeah, it happened to be the right person, the right time.
yeah, there's even more to that story. Can I share a little bit more?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, please.
And Paul, you may have seen it on social media. I don't know, but so where I ended up, where the ambulance picked me up was, was a it was a residential house. And I was on basically in somebody's front yard. And the folks that were in the house came outside. And we think either the nurse that stopped, or we think it was actually the one of the family members that actually did call 911 at this house that I stopped in front of. And so they initiated that 911 process. Couple days later, my wife, it was about a mile, they're about a mile from our house. A couple days later, my wife put a note in the mailbox, basically thanking them for, calling 911 and left her contact information. The next day, my wife got a message on Facebook saying, it's this long message saying that she was the granddaughter of the couple that lives in that house. And the night before, so Friday night, her grandfather, who lived in that house, had a heart attack and died.
Wow.
And so she shared that with my wife in this message saying, yeah, my grandfather, the night before, same thing. We had to call 911. The same, I think, police officer or EMT responded to my call that was there the night before. And what's so even more crazy about it is I started to have the stomach ache like right in front of their house, right before their house. And I passed it. And then I called my wife. I ended up turning around, tried to make myself throw up. I was across the street and it was a really tight turn. I was like, I'm going to go across the street into this yard because there was this tree there that I was like, I'm going to lay down there. My wife can easily see me when she comes out of the street to pick me up. And I ended up in that yard. So we reached out. Her name is Stephanie. We reached out to her. And my wife and I actually went to her grandfather's wake the following Friday. So he passed away on a Friday night, horribly. And Saturday morning, I had the heart attack. And on Friday, we went to his wake and got to meet them and pay our respects. And we've since become friends on Facebook. And It's just a wild, almost unbelievable story to me, that that I ended up there, and that he had had this event. So it's the whole guardian angel sort of thing. That
Exactly.
I personally have a little bit of a struggle with God, guardian angel, but I'm fully on board with that at this point. It's taken me a little while to sort of surrender myself to that, but somehow I put myself there. I mentioned therapy. My therapist was a little bit more of a realist. She said, "No, you put yourself there. You've got to allow yourself the grace and give yourself the credit that you put yourself there." But at the same time, I'm like, why? That's the real.
Yeah, you didn't consciously do it.
Yeah, why? Right, Paul. Exactly. It's like, but it happened, and it's just another piece of that story that is just, it's really sometimes too hard to, to believe. But again, it's one of those things happen for a reason. And so I see, Stephanie sharing about, the anniversary of her grandpa's passing, and it's always, it's tough. It's tough for me. I wish things were different for her family. But anyways.
Yeah, that all comes flooding back, I'm sure, when you see those posts on online, just all the memories of everything that happened that day come flooding back in.
And why, like why did I survive, and why didn't he survive? And then there's survivor's guilt, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that comes along with it. And a lot of this stuff I don't really, I don't really talk a lot about outwardly with people often. I share a lot with, it's when I do talk about it, or allow myself, give myself permission to share the stuff, it's, that's where I think
Comes out.
it's still pretty raw in a lot of ways for me. But I also don't want to dwell on it. I think one of the early, well, I don't think, but one of the early things I said to my wife, Katie, is, we went out walking maybe a day or two after I had the heart attack. And I said, I don't want this to define me. I don't want this to be my only story. I think it's now part of my story, but I don't want it to be the story. So that's, I try to live my life in that way. I mean, for the first couple months, I wanted to talk about it all. That's all I wanted to talk about, because I think that was me sort of processing it. So I'd see a friend, or I'd be like, I just wanted to, like, blah, like, can you believe this? Like, and they'd be like, yeah, let's go do this, or let's go do that. I think they just wanted to spend time together, not necessarily dwell on that. And I've since moved past that. I'm less wanting to talk about it now, unless we're in this type of situation. But yeah, I said that pretty early to my wife. I'm like, I don't want this to be all that I am, is like a heart attack survivor. But it is, it's an important thing. And the fact that I'm, like I said, relatively unscathed, and I'm happy, I'm doing well, I'm able to run again, which it just feels like a miracle
Exactly.
every time.
Look what you're doing now. It's like, and it's really, you're on the right show. Inspiring journeys. It's like inspiring to other people that you can overcome this and do this like ultimate thing. I mean, the Boston Marathon, that's like the ultimate in running as far as I'm concerned. So So like you said, it's only a part of your story. I mean, you have enough as we're like almost like 2 hours into an hour and a half into this, you have like quite a story. You know, the whole entire family, it's incredible. So, yeah, so this is just a part that you're overcoming and battling, and you're killing it. You're doing great.
Thanks, Paul. That means a lot.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. And I get the whole, like, I don't want it to define who I am, and because I get that a lot too. And much like with you, it's like I've learned to exist and figure out ways around it. And in my daily life, other than small little things, like, it's just another typical day at this point, is the way that I go about my day. And so it's always really awkward when people bring it up, and they're like, "Oh, well, like, you're doing this incredible work, and you're inspiring, and da da da." And like, I understand it's coming from a place of compliments in like a kind place, but like with me, it's like I'm just this is my life. Like this is what I've grown up with. This is how I've adjusted to my life. And you know, if I can help and educate people that are going through the stuff that I'm going through, I'm there. But I also am always really aware that there's other people out there that are going through other things in their life that are just as severe, if not worse, than the things that I've gone through. And so I'm always like, there's so many other people out there that are doing incredible things and like way more incredible than the things that I've been going through. And so it's all perspective, I think, of where everybody is in their lives and what they've had to overcome. And so I always have a hard time with it and get a little uncomfortable in those situations when people are like focusing in on it. And I'm just like, yeah, but you know, like I'm just gonna go out and we're gonna run or we're gonna do this. Like it's just a typical day.
You shouldn't minimize your impact on folks, though, Carrie, because what may not seem like a big deal or what you don't want to be perceived as a big deal is probably a big deal to somebody because they might see themselves in you. And maybe they're at a point where they feel like they can't do what you're doing. But if they hear your words and hear you share what your story is, it may inspire them to say, you know what? If she can do it, I can do it. It could be a young girl, a little girl who, you know, isn't sure about herself and she just figured out that she has this. I don't know. I'm just,
No, I totally get it. Like
yeah. So allow yourself the permission to live in that. I think you should, because I'm sure you're inspiring people beyond even what you understand to be, you know, inspiring.
No, that it I totally understand where you're coming from. It's just it's such a awkward it's an awkward place to live and to take that in, and especially it's because of that whole like this has been something in my life that has been normal for like this is normal for me. This is and it's really hard to think outside of it that it's not normal for others around me, right? That's not something that they've had experience. So it's a real mind bend to put yourself into that their shoes. But I totally understand where you're coming from, 100%.
Yeah, I mean, I know for myself, soon after I had the heart attack, I was seeking out, you know, as much information as I could and stories and looking for someone like me to feel like this is okay, like I'm going to be okay, because I didn't know if I was going to be okay. And so that's why I allow myself to do these things. And I was just recently on a podcast called The Heart Attack Thriver with a gentleman named Brian Simpson. And I listened to his podcast pretty regularly after I had the heart attack because it was so informative and helpful for me to hear, you know, people sharing their stories. And I was just looking for anything that I could relate to, anything that related to me and where I was at. And so I reached out to him and I said, hey, I would love to share my story. I haven't heard a story like mine on your show, and I would love to share my story, because my hope was that there's someone else like me out there that maybe just had a heart attack and doesn't know what's next. And even if it's one person, you know, that was, for me, that's an important piece of this whole thing, is even if it inspires one person, you know, that they're going to be okay. Like, you don't have to be on the other side of it and, you know, be in bed and hide. So, but yeah, I think you need to allow yourself. We're all our worst critics, right? And we're all terrible at taking compliments, no matter what it is. Oh, you know, nice shirt or whatever. Oh, thanks, whatever. So I totally get where you're coming from with that. But being on the other side and
No, I
learning about
appreciate
the
that.
story. Yeah. So anyway,
I 100% that perspective is it. I appreciate that perspective, and thank you for
yeah.
sharing that with me because I think it, you know, you don't hear that often. You don't hear that perspective of it. It's just, you know, the quick little like not comments, but like little conversations that you have with people and that are on the surface, and you don't really hear like their perspective on it and why they're saying what they're saying. So thank you for
Welcome.
sharing that. I appreciate
Yeah,
that.
of course.
The same goes with you. You're making like a huge difference. Even when I see pictures with you with your daughter, you can tell that she like totally looks up to you. So you're like making you're like a good influence on her as well. So
Sometimes she does. Sometimes I drive her crazy.
Do you guys want to go over the 22 too many veteran this week? Or so we can do that. For any new listeners, 22 Too Many is an awesome organization that brings awareness and remembrance to veterans who die of suicide, and they support prevention as well. The 22 stands for the number of veterans who die from suicide each day, and the reports don't even take into consideration the drug overdoses or accidents that weren't really accidents. So you can follow 22toomany.org. That's the numbers 22 and then too many.org. I'll also add the link in the show notes. And we'll do like this week's veteran is Ellis Weems. And Ellis was born in Landstuhl, West Germany on June 21st, 1992. And this was his mother, Teresa, wrote this in. She said she was still in the military, and he was the joy of her life. He was r raised in Harper Woods, Michigan, and Ellis was her only child. She said, "My mirror image who left this earth far too soon. He loved life and loved to put a smile on the faces of those who came in contact with him. He was active in soccer, baseball, and extreme skateboarder. He loved to eat, my goodness, my grocery bill stayed high when he was home." He was a free spirit, always soaking up the information he received from others so that he can master it in his own life. I miss his smile in our conversations about life. I miss my son every single day. July 15th, 2016, will be a constant reminder that the joy of life is no longer with her. And in spring of 2017, Teresa ran a 5K in memory of Ellis at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. This episode will go out to Ellis and his mother Teresa. Yeah, it's so sad, and he seemed like so full of life. So again, you never know. I mean, it's the same with Chris here. He's like, it looks like optimal health, and you just never know what's gonna happen. So yeah, appreciate life while you can.
Yep, take it all in as you can. Tell the people that you love them. You know, if you, I've learned if you have a moment where you feel like you need to tell somebody that you appreciate them or that you love them or that you're thinking about them, then take the couple of minutes to tell them that because you just never know. You don't know when it's going to end. Like that goes for your parents, grandparents, anybody. Just take the second to say, hey, I was thinking about you today. And I just wanted to let you know that I love you, or, you know, let's make plans to, you know, go out for coffee or something to, you know, reconnect because you just never know. And then if it's too late, it's too late.
Yep, and then we can do our lightning round.
Lightning round.
Lightning round.
The lightning round.
The lightning round.
Okay, Chris, what's the most unexpected thing that has happened to you on your journey?
The most unexpected thing. I would say for me, it's realizing how many people, I mentioned this before while we were talking, but how many people out there really do care about me and my family. You think you know, but until something like this happens, that's when you really learn who the people are that, you know, are important. And we, you know, got so many, you know, words of encouragement and people that were cooking for us and just offering to do everything for us and reaching out. I mean, I heard from so many different people from my past that I heard from in years. And so I think the most unexpected thing is just learning how much love there is out there and how much was shared with us. And the flip side is you learn not everyone is who you thought they were. And, you know, and that's unfortunate, but, you know, that's the way life is. And people choose to be in your life or not. And this really brought that to light for me in several different ways. And so that's what I would say, really, just the amount of love that we share with us.
Yeah, you get like, so much support. And yeah, that was really huge between basically back to back between Katie and you just in that short period. And it's amazing to have, you know, those people in your life. And yeah, that was holiday season too on top of it. So yeah, what a crazy time. And it really wasn't that long ago. It was only a little over a year ago. So
Katie and I, maybe a little bit of dark humor, but we used to joke to each other and say, like, people must wonder what is going on in our house. What are we up to? Mm-hmm. And we're not up to anything. But just the fact that those two things happened subsequent, you know, so close to each other, people must be like, that's just wild. What is going on there? But no, jokes aside, yeah, it was really something to you know, hear from so many people. Mm-hmm. So many people. I mean, when I was in the hospital, the first morning I woke up, I mean, my phone just exploded, you know. It was incredible. I mean, it was really something. And like I said, hearing from people that I hadn't heard from in forever, and suddenly they were reaching out to me. And so news travels fast. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way. In our world today, news, I was shocked by how quickly the news, I was like, how did you know this already? Like, what is going on here? The game of telephone is strong now with the internet and
right.
texting. Yeah. Anyways.
Facebook yeah. groups.
Yep, for sure.
All right, let's see. What, do you have a favorite quote, a mantra that keeps you motivated?
Oh, favorite quote. Oh, so, okay. I mentioned the heart attack Thriver podcast, and he had a guest on, and I need to go back and listen to get her name, because I need to give her credit, but she said something that really struck me, and it's this: it was, forward is the new pace.
Oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Writing that in down. A lot of different variations, I'll say, like, you know, I keep moving forward, I'm just going to keep going, I had a heart attack, but a couple days later I was out walking, I just started moving. Or it's the new pace.
It's a good one.
I love that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I've sort of subscribed to through this training and what I will do on Marathon Monday, you know. That's just keep moving forward.
That's a great one for ultras too, man. That's like a good mantra to keep in the back of your head when you're in the deep miles. And I like that. I'm going to keep that one.
Well, you know what's funny? I know this is supposed to be a speed round, but I was
really... sorry. Yeah, we joke around about that.
When I heard that quote, I was reflecting. When I first started doing distance running, I started with my wife, Katie, and there was no watches. There was no GPS. There was no Strava. We would just pick a point to start at, and we would drive to mm-hmm. do the miles like the night before, right? To figure, okay, we got to do 15 tomorrow. So let's drive 15 miles. And we do the run, and we would never talk about how fast we went, how slow we went. What does it look like on Strava? And that's why that quote sort of stuck with me. I was like, that's the way it used to be. It used to be just move forward. It doesn't matter how fast you're going. Because mm-hmm. for so many years with the watch and the Strava, I was so focused on how fast did I do that mile? How fast did I do this mile? What do I have to do the next mile? If it's not on Strava, it doesn't count, right? That whole kind of mindset. So that's why that quote really struck with me. It's kind of old school, right? It's like, it's old school, but it applies to me today. And so that's why I found it really hit me. So
yeah, it just shows how much running is a metaphor for life, because I think of it forward as the new pace. You could think of that just in everyday life, just like, you know, improve a little bit each day, do something new each day, just to, you know, move forward through your life. And it, like you said, like it, you have like all this distractions and stuff, like you're talking about the Strava, but in life there's also all these distractions, and you know, you lose your way and you just keep moving forward. And, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You can overcome anything. See, all right, if you can sum up what do you think got you where you want to be? Yeah, I'm trying to reword this. If you can sum up like what you think got you where you want to be, what would you say?
If I could sum up what got, oh, okay. I would say the support of my wife, first of all, and primarily, she's my cheerleader, my kids, my friends, and I think a determination and a perseverance maybe that I didn't even realize that I had until sort of the things that we've been through as a family. I think those are the things that really have gotten me to where I am today.
Yeah, it goes for everybody in your family. It's like, yeah, it's like at every point there's somebody that, needs each other and you're all there for each other. So that's incredible. Yeah. All right. So yeah, I guess we should start wrapping things up. So I think I have the link, but I don't know if you want to tell people where they can like donate for the B-Fights ALD and
Yeah, so really the easiest thing to do would
charity.
be to bring up Google and just type in hashtag B as in Braden fights ALD. And that'll the first link you'll see at Google will bring you right to our fundraising page. And if folks want to donate, that would be terrific. And you can also get reach us through there as well.
And spread the word about this.
That's awareness and money. That's what we're really trying to do here. Yep.
Exactly. All right, Carrie, would you like to tell people how they can find you?
You can find me on Instagram at running underscore with underscore the underscore rock star, or on Facebook, Every Run Has a Story.
And I hope people check it out, your articles for your
Well, yeah, if you want to check out that part, I have a separate account because Instagram, I feel like, doesn't like if you have too many different things in the basket, like you lose your followers or like what people are looking at. So if you want to see the concert photography stuff, that's Carrie Nelson Media Instagram. You can find me right on there. But yeah, it's fun. It's a good time. That's like my whole like running is a part of my life and like fitness and all that. But like music and like concerts, I've been going since I was like 10 years old. So like to have all this finally kind of happening is just 10-year-old Carrie would be like, you are not in the photo pit taking photos of all of these people that like you've looked up to for years and years and years. She would be blown away. So it's pretty cool.
That's incredible. I'm so happy for you.
Thank you.
And then, of course, you can still find me at the Roadrunner. It's RHODE. Oh, and I should also mention once again that I'm wearing the hat. I'm doing the Gatsby Days 5K on June 8th, Saturday, June 8th. And I set up a Team Roadrunner. It's RHODE. If you want to join the team, and that's going to be taking place in Cranston, Rhode Island, ahead of the Gatsby Days parade. And, even if you want to walk it, you don't have to be a runner, but you can walk it. But you can walk it at a decent pace because then if you're too slow, then the marching bands are going to start walking over
Oh,
you. So,
instead of the balloon ladies at Disney, it's the marching band. That's
yeah,
pretty
or
cool.
the Revolutionary War soldiers with their muskets. So.
That's a little terrifying. That's a little bit more scarier than a bunch of ladies holding balloons. The way
that, but.
that the groups on Disney talk about it, you would think that they were like the evil empire or something like coming to like take you away.
And well, I'll be talking to you again, Carrie, beforehand. But yeah, I want to wish you both the best at this Boston
Thank
Marathon.
you.
It's so exciting. I'll be there. I'll be there cheering you on. That's another thing I forgot to bring up. I wanted to bring up that like I love going. I'm just going to be doing this every year. One of these years, maybe I'll run it. But I'm going to at least be there and go to it to watch. And like as like a running nerd, it's awesome to see like all these like top runners in the world running by. But the thing that really gets me is all the other runners that are running for charities, and you see them running and they have the charities on their bibs that they're running for and everything. And just everyday runners, like we were talking about, that work for a living, full-time jobs and stuff, and they still have to find time to train. They don't train full time, and it's a lot. And for them to accomplish this on this day,
It's
it's
huge.
incredible.
It always blows my mind. Like I did Dopey at Disney for cancer research, and it was such a fraction of what you guys, raised in for Boston charities and Like I just that was a lot to take on, and to know that these people are you guys are raising thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars on top of training, and you know, not just like marathon training, but major marathon training, and working and taking care of families, and like those are the real heroes to me. And I get so angry when I hear runners like say that the charity people don't have a place at the marathon,
Oh, that's
because like
crazy.
it's just like, are you kidding me? Like these people are busting their butts doing all of these things and like working 10 times harder than you are. And a lot of them are not Boston Marathon qualifiers, which means they're out there training for longer hours. Like can we, we're all runners. We're all like doing this for like different reasons, and it's all for the greater good of whatever it is in our lives that are going to make things more positive and you know change different things in the world. And can we just all just support each other? Like why is there always going to be negativity attached to it? So I my hat's off to all the charity runners.
Yeah, but is there this like you have to raise a certain amount, right? Is that right, Chris? You have to
Usually
raise
like a
this.
minimum of 10,000. We're pretty close.
Yeah, every team's a little bit different. I think the Mass General team is 15,000 now. And the first thing they want is your credit card information, because if you don't hit that those goals, they'll take it right out of your credit card. So it's a I second what Carrie was just saying. It's disheartening when people complain about charity runners, because charity runners raise a ton of money for different causes, and they put themselves on the line. You know, it's quite a thing to commit to $15,000, you know. So I'm with you, Carrie. I was doing thumbs down. I don't know if anyone can see, but I was doing thumbs down while you were talking. Yeah, but it varies, Paul. I think it's
But still a lot, yeah.
oh
On
yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of money.
top of the training and everything else. And there are people that travel literally from all over the world, so they're paying for airfare, hotels, and everything on top of everything else. So yeah, kudos. My heart goes out to everybody. And yeah, I wish everybody the best of luck. And I'll be there cheering you on. I got my cowbell. I'm ready.
I'm not
They're
going to
looking
miss you
for
this year. The last
it.
year I ran right by him.
Well, we
This
slapped
year
five. Well, we slapped five. You just didn't remember.
I'm. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'll be at. Oh yeah, so Chris, I'll be at the Chris across the street from the Framingham T station. So I believe it's like right around the 10K mark,
Okay.
right after the 10K water station. There's all
Okay,
porta
great.
potties and stuff. Yeah, so I'll be there.
I'll be on the lookout for you.
Yeah, I'm trying to. Adriana promised last year that she was gonna go, and I don't know, we'll see. But yeah, there'll be at least like a couple of us there cheering you guys on, and yeah, I'm so looking forward to it. And yeah, another thing is we don't know what the weather's gonna be like. It's always different, so another
I
challenge to
mean
come.
that you'd be surprised the jolt that people get when they see friendly, familiar faces. It's Carrie can attest to that, I bet. It's
It's the
like gas in
best.
the tank. It's like gas in the tank. First time I ran Boston, the first people that I saw, I actually started crying. I was so excited. I was like, look at me, I'm doing this thing that I've been dreaming about doing. It was like the first familiar face. And yeah. Anyways, there's a
Awesome.
picture of it too, Paul. It was Cheryl from our old Meditech days. Her
Oh
and her
yeah.
husband. Yeah. Maybe she'll hear this, maybe she won't. She got an awesome picture of that moment, but yeah, that was a real deal thing for me. It was pretty crazy.
That's the
Anyways.
best. So
Yep.
good.
Can't wait.
Yeah,
Thanks again for having me,
absolutely.
you guys. This
Yeah,
is
thank you
really
so much for doing this. Yeah, this
fun.
has been a blast. This is incredible. And what a story you have. And yeah, and I'm sure there's so many aspects to it. So I'm sure you're going to touch somebody's life more than once. So yeah, for sure. I'm so happy that you did
Thanks, Paul.
this. Yeah,
Thanks,
thank you so
Paul. Thanks,
much.
Carrie. Thank you, Carrie, too.
This has been incredible. And hopefully, I run into you at some point on Marathon Monday.
Yeah,
Maybe I'll
I was
see
going to
you.
actually say, Carrie, while you're sharing your music stuff, you and I could probably have a 2-hour conversation about music,
Oh, yeah.
about bands and music. Yeah, but that's a whole other thing. I think we should, yeah.
can
We
definitely
actually
see
talked
that.
about that last year when Carrie first came on. We talked for a while, and then we said, "Oh, we could do a whole episode just about music." So yeah. And I know you're the same way, Chris. We got the same thing in common with
Yep, for sure.
that. So yeah, that's
I keep that in
awesome.
our back pocket for one of these days. We'll do it.
Yep.
Great.
All
Well, thanks
right.
again, you guys.
Thank
Thank
you so
you.
much. And thank you everybody for watching. And oh, before you go, we got a couple of comments. Tom, oh, we were just talking about Tom, probably off the air. Chris, you were complimenting like that episode and Tom Lyman, and he said it was amazing and this is great. And he thanks us for sharing. And then my mom checked it. She said, "Good luck at the marathon. Stay healthy and be safe."
That's
That's a
awesome.
mom thing
Great.
to
Thank you. It's such a mom thing.
say.
Make sure you take your fluids.
My mom famously said, "You pay to do that?
Yeah. What
Yeah.
did you sign up for now?" That's what
Yeah.
my mom always used to say.
Doing all this work just for a banana. All
Yeah.
right.
Yeah. That's good. But if I don't see you, good luck. And have
You,
an
Carrie.
amazing race. Hopefully, I will see you. If you pass by me, just give a tap on the shoulder and say hey when you're running by.
Do you know what time you're starting, Carrie?
I think the adaptives usually start after first wave, usually is when they let us go out, just to give us time to get out on the course and kind of like set pace so that. Like there's that's and I don't want to like keep on dragging guys on, but like that's the difference between Boston and New York that I appreciated. With Boston, we had like a good like 20 minutes, I think, between the first wave and the second wave coming through to kind of really settle in for like the adaptive runners to feel good, for visually impaired runners to get situated and all that before they came on. And with New York, they saddled us between two groups, and we were just running all in one group together, and it was overwhelming. And I've ran in both like regular waves and adaptive waves, and like coming from an adaptive like perspective, for some that's intense to be surrounded by really fast runners. I know even in Boston it was a little scary when the second wave comes flying up behind you, and you're like, oh my God, I'm going to die. I'm just gonna stay off to the side. It's gonna be okay. It's scary. So I'm pretty sure we start right after the first wave goes. So you'll probably pass me at some point on there because I'm strolling along runner at my own little pace.
All right, thank you everybody. Thank you everybody for watching. And I know we have some people on live stream today, so thank you for watching and thank you for everybody that's going to check us out afterwards. And this episode will be up on audio on Wednesday. So
Awesome.
thank you so much. We'll see you
Thanks,
next
guys.
time.
Yeah.
Bye, guys.
Bye.